The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Scaramouche, we found out yesterday he indeed can do the Fandango. He is out at the White House. Huge upset. You know all of the details by now. We'll recap them quickly, but I want to tell you what it means. More predictability, more stability. There is a fight in the White House, and I'm going to show you what the next 2 and 6 years may look like. We begin right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
We have an incredible show for you today. If you missed yesterday's program, go back and listen to hour number 3. You can find it at glennbeck.com or the Blaze TV. But I will tell you that yesterday, the incredible interview that we did with the guy who's a listener of ours, 70-some years old, he, in the 1940s, was raised, obviously as a boy. His grandmother started cross-dressing him. Then his uncle started to sexually abuse him. His father used to beat him. He became, in the 1980s, one of the first to go transgender and have the surgery here in America. Then, years later, he switched back. And boy, is he wise. Very politically incorrect, but a fascinating interview. Today is going to be very much the same. Amy Fabrini is on with us. Now, she's a mother who has had her children taken from her by the state of Oregon because the state of Oregon says she has too low of an IQ to be able to raise her own children. She does have an IQ in the 70s. She's going to be with us along with her advocate in hour number 2. Hour number 3 is another amazing person, Tom Doyle, who has been studying the Christians in the Middle East who are literally standing in the fire. An amazing, amazing show for you today. You don't want to miss a second. Let's get right to the news of the day, which was yesterday, Donald Trump fires Scaramouche, who was a friend of Donald Trump, but he really wasn't a friend of Donald Trump. Here is Scaramouche at the beginning of the campaign in 2015, talking about Donald Trump.
I'm moving around paper right now, Maria, but that's another hack politician.
You call Donald Trump a hack?
He's a hack politician.
You're in
trouble. He's probably going to make Elizabeth Warren his vice presidential nominee with comments like
that. Do you think he's a
plant? Anti-American. It's very, very divisive.
Do you think Donald's a plant?
I'll tell you who he's going to be president of. You can tell Donald I said this. The Queens County Bullies Association. You got to cut it out now and stop all this crazy rhetoric spinning everybody's heads around.
I like how you say that now, but I've had a problem with the way he talked about women for years.
I don't like the way he talks about women. I don't like the way he talks about our friend Megyn Kelly. And you know what? The politicians don't want to go at Trump because he's got a big mouth and he's afraid he's going to light him up on Fox News and all these other places. But I'm not a politician.
Here's a guy who's on television saying, I don't like the way he talks. And oh, my gosh, have you seen the 2 interviews that he gave in 10 days while at the White House? This guy is a fascinating dude. His wife has left him because of his, they say, I don't believe this, because of his obsession with working at the White House with Donald Trump. He sold his company to work with Donald Trump. He was the main fundraiser for Donald Trump. After saying those things, the main fundraiser for Donald Trump. Goes to work for 10 days. His wife doesn't even want him at the birth of their second child. He's not invited in. They're still married. This guy, there's something really wrong with this guy. And I think that's why the White House embraced him. Donald Trump likes street fighters, and this guy is a street fighter, as we found. So what happened after 10 days? Why did he find himself out of the White House, and what does it mean? Yesterday, I started working on a chalkboard. We did it, kind of threw it together yesterday for the TV show, and we were working on it as the Scaramucci thing unfolded. We started earlier in the morning, and then the Scaramucci thing happened, which none of us saw coming, and had to, you know, it's airtime, so I go on the air, and it wasn't quite right. I want to share this. If you happen to have a subscription to the Blaze TV, go there now. This is an important chalkboard, and I'll try to explain it to you fully in radio. It's easier to understand if you can see it, but let me explain what I believe is coming in 2018 and 2020 beyond. So what comes next? What does all of this mean? I believe this is what comes next is predictability. I think this is going to help us be able to see where the president is headed. And I believe some of the clown elements of this White House are going to come to an end, because it's not just Donald Trump. It is Reince Priebus. Anyone could walk into the Oval Office at any time while Reince Priebus was there. That's insanity. Everybody needs to go through the chief of staff. You just don't walk into the Oval Office. So it was a clown show. It was very divided. By bringing General Kelly in, it's going to add stability. General Kelly is one of the most amazing generals in the history of our country. The Marine Corps loves him for a reason. He's a good, honorable, loyal guy who brought order to the Marine Corps. So I want to explain the four sides of Donald Trump. And I want to explain why I think these things are coming and what all of this means. But let me first say, General Kelly, the reason why I think he took this job. He has no political experience working and wrangling Capitol Hill and trying to get all of the, you know, votes and knowing exactly who the president should be talking. That's not his skill. He's a general. It's not his skill. That's what the president was hoping from Reince Priebus, that he'd be able to wrangle Capitol Hill. But we've also seen in the actions of the president, he doesn't really care about that either. He just wants it. Just give me some bills to sign. He's not actively involved in the bills. He's just a guy who's like, okay, tell me what you got. Here's where I want to go. Tell me what you got. I'll help you if I can. You know, I'll tweet some things. I'll give a speech, whatever. But he's not actively involved. This is always an important role for chief of staff, to be able to connect the White House with the party. The general doesn't have that. The general doesn't want that. This is a general who is a legend. Why would he step into a job that he wouldn't like, wouldn't really want, and in a place that you have a good chance of failing just because you're watching the last 6 months? Had an argument with somebody at the studios on, you know, just a friendly discussion with somebody at the studios Friday night before General Kelly. Guy came in and he said, I think Donald Trump thinks that General Kelly's going to do it. And I said, he'll do it. He said, no, he won't. He has no experience. He wouldn't want that. Why would he step down? Because it's the commander in chief who is in trouble while the country is in trouble. And the commander in chief is coming to him and saying, I need your help. And Kelly can wrangle. Look, it's like kids have taken over the White House. And I think he can make those kids shut up, sit down. You're coming through me. This is the president of the United States, the commander in chief. Knock it off. It's not about you. It's about the country. I think he can do that in spades. And when his commander in chief said, I need you and I need you to do this, I think Kelly said, okay, But listen, we're doing this my way. I ran the Marine Corps. I can run this house, but I can't if you usurp me. If you go around and you don't follow what I need. What I need is everything must run through me, and I have final say. I will consult with you. I'll tell you where I'm thinking, but if I need to make a decision, I'm making a decision, and you got to back me up. I think because Donald Trump, there is a part of Donald Trump that really likes the honor of the military, likes the way the military operates, and I think he also gets, by default, the respect of men he respects, and they treat him the way Donald Trump expects to be treated. Yes, sir. Good or bad, no judgment there. That's what Donald Trump likes. He respects our military. He believes our military is full of good guys. He likes the honor of that. But he's also getting, by default, that yes, sir, no questions asked. You are the commander in chief. Yes, sir. And he loves that. So he gave that deal to John Kelly. When John Kelly saw the latest outburst by Mooch, he had to have had a conversation with the president and say, Mr. President, this is craziness. We can't have this kind of stuff. And he's a loose cannon. He's got to fall in line. And Donald Trump most likely said to him, do what you want. I made that deal with you. Now, this is a very big one, I think. And it's going to work out to, I think, Donald Trump's favor in some ways. Whether Donald Trump eventually sees it that way, I don't know. But if it works out, it will only strengthen General Kelly, which will only make what I'm about to tell you even more predictable. So I do think it happened exactly the way it has been described by some sources, where Mooch came to him and said, I don't work for you. Yes, you do. Get out. And had him escorted out. Why would you escort him out? Because A, you think he's a loose cannon, and B, you think he might try to make a beeline for the president. I want to show everybody in this building, I have the authority. I have the authority. And what I say goes. Now, there are people in the White House that are celebrating that. And there are people in the White House who do not like that, especially people like Steve Bannon, who we'll get to in a minute. Steve Bannon and, you know, General Mattis, General McMaster, and General Kelly, they're not fans of the Bannon wing. But that's an important part of Donald Trump's psyche. And I want to stop there and then take it and pick it up, and I will tell you the four pieces of Donald Trump, how they all fit together, who's playing what role, and how this John Kelly move and what's been happening with the GOP on healthcare makes Donald Trump more predictable. And you may like it, you may not like it, but I believe it to be what is coming our way, good or bad. And we'll do that in just a second. First, let me tell you about my Patriot Supply. I was having dinner last night with a guy in the military. He just got back from Afghanistan, and God bless those guys. But we're having dinner, and I said, have you seen the latest with the ICBM? And he said, yeah. Now, that can hit Hawaii and Alaska. And I said, no. This one can hit New York. This one is the full ICBM and can carry the payload of a full-fledged nuclear bomb. We are entering the times where we could see a city vaporized. I don't think we are going to see that. I hope to God we're not going to see that. But nobody can predict Kim Jong-un. Nobody knows where he's at. I would think a Cold War would be fine with Kim Jong-un. But we don't know, and that was the red line that we said he can't cross. The president said, don't worry, we're going to deal with them. In what way? In what way? Everything that I've seen ends with at least a million dead in the first day. How do you do this? Times are very, very unstable. Did you read the report on bonds from Alan Greenspan that came out yesterday? Oh my gosh, the stock market's fine. That's real. But there's a huge bond bubble, and when that thing bursts, everybody's going to panic. Okay, thanks, Alan. I want you to be prepared. We flew two supersonic B-1B bombers over the Korean Peninsula in a show of force. What comes next? What comes next on the stock market? I don't know. But 102 servings of survival food this week, $99. That's 102 servings for $99. Healthy food, really tastes good, lasts up to 25 years. Now, that's less than a dollar per serving. You get breakfast, lunch, dinner, ship free to your home. What will this do for you? It gives you time in case of an economic collapse or a reset, and the banks are closed for a few days. That's happened before in history. We just don't remember it, but it's happened. Do you have food in the house to last you and the family a few days while things are reset? How about something, your neighbor, your friend, your family member loses their job? Can you help them in any way? $99 for 102 servings. Call right now, 800-271-63, or order online, preparewithglenn.com, 800-271-63, preparewithglenn.com.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Okay.
727 Beck.
Let me explain what comes next, and I believe predictability from the president. The president is split into four sections, and people look at this as the Bannon bubble or the family bubble or the, you know, the general's bubble or the GOP bubble. It's not. Look at it and separate it into four, but let's look at it as this. You have the story bubble. And in the story bubble are Steve Bannon, Steve Miller, Sebastian Gorka, Mike Flynn, Mooch. Now, these guys don't necessarily have to get along with each other, but they are the people that Donald Trump is not loyal to at all. He's loyal to them until they're no longer useful. But these are the people who are the wet works. These are the people who he says, how am I going to get him? How do I win? And they're the story people. They're the ones who get the dirt. They're the ones who do the hatchet jobs. They're the ones that do all the dirty work. Because there is a part of Donald Trump that's only about winning, and it's win at all cost. So this is his win at all cost people. And I would include some members of the press in the right in this win at all cost. Do and say whatever you have to do. And it's important to remember, he's not loyal to any of these people unless they're really effective. And even if they're effective, if some other higher priority comes in, you're dead. Then the other side of the story, win at all cost, is use every tool. Win at all costs and use every tool. This is where he makes alliances like Reince Priebus, Sean Spicer, and Mike Pence. Mike Pence is the only one that hasn't faded in his usefulness, the GOP. Donald Trump wanted to be president. He always thought he was going to run as a Democrat. He ended up running as a Republican, and he embraced the leadership of the GOP. That's done. That's done. Because he doesn't need them anymore. They're actually hurting him at this point. So what you're going to see first is the useful idiots are going to be the GOP. They're disposable, and they're going to be made into the villains by the storyline writers and the performers. They will get them at all costs. And in 2018, 2020, you're going to see a two-pronged war going on. You're going to see the press is the villain, and the GOP, with an exception of a few, is the villain that he will run against. That's the political storyline, but what's deeper than that is more important. We get to that next.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
All right. So what comes next? We saw the firing of Mooch yesterday by John Kelly.
Scaramouche, will you do the fandango?
Yes, he's got plenty of time to do that now. John Kelly, I told you earlier, was a code of honor kind of guy and has loyalty to Trump as the commander in chief. He's loyal to America. And I think Trump likes that. He likes the military guys. And he likes the ultimate. I mean, what's more powerful? A guy who has troops behind him, like Kelly, or a guy who builds buildings? I think Trump has real respect for people who can lead soldiers into battle. Okay? This is all good. I think he has that respect for them. And he also gets the stroking of the cat, which he likes, of somebody is treating him like President of the United States with real honor and integrity. Yes, sir, Mr. President. Trump likes that. I just put in useful idiots, you know, Reince Priebus, Sean Spicer, the press is playing a useful idiot right now. They are going to be the storyline. They are going to be the villains. But I took Mike Pence out of that because I believe Mike Pence. The word is that Mike, everybody badmouths Donald Trump. All of the people in his cabinet, everybody else, apparently all badmouths Donald Trump. This guy's crazy, he's out of control, blah, 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 blah. Except for Mike Pence. Behind closed doors, not a word. Always, he's the president of the United States. I'm going to move him into the loyal code of honor camp. I think he may not be a useful idiot. I think he may actually have the respect of the president because he's come on board. He is the vice president and he's treating that as a constitutional honor. So, if you look at Donald Trump and you look at his priority is to his family, the loyalty to his family. And then the ruthlessness of winning is just him. It's been him forever. He will win. You're going to get tired of winning. He will win, and he will do what he has to do to destroy his enemy, and he will win. So, number one personality trait of Donald Trump, he is loyal to his family. Number two, he is ruthless to his enemies. Number three, he likes law and order. He said it in how many speeches? It is how he likes. It's my way or get the hell out. So he likes that law and order. And four, the fourth side of him is just, you know, I'll use every tool in the box to get to protect my family or to get things done. Okay? So let's focus now instead of on two and four, win at all costs and use every tool. Let's concentrate now on what's coming in number one and number three. Because remember, box win at all costs, number two, use every tool, the pawns, GOP, whoever gets in his way, the press. Number four, that's just about winning. That's just about the election. When you get to the box about loyalty with his family and enforcement, this starts to go into who he really is. His family, no one is going to split him from his family, and he is not going to. His family, I'm convinced, and especially with what we found out last night about the writing of the email exchange with Russia. That was the president that did that, not Donald Trump Jr. and not the family. He is going to be on the front line for his family. That could I mean, in a worst case scenario, that has made the president vulnerable to, you know, it's not going to go to jail time, but serious investigation of cover up. That's really bad. You don't do that for anybody except family. So he is true and he is loyal. When it comes to policies, I truly believe he's agnostic. He doesn't care. He's never thought of these things. And that's not a bad thing. He's a builder. He's a real estate mogul. He's a guy who spent his time just trying to build an empire for real estate. So he looks at the law as, you know, what do I have to do to get this done? I want to get this done. That's the way he's always looked at things. He gets his policies, really, his roots, I think, from his family, past generations, and his children. And he looks at his children as very smart, you know, especially Ivanka, as a leader of the family and somebody who knows what's right and is good and is decent. Well, those policies, the family, they are liberal. If you look, if you put somebody, you look into the family bubble, you will find Gary Cohn. Gary Cohn really is in the family bubble. He's a Democrat. Now let's go from his loyalty to his family to the other side of him that is real, and that is the enforcement. That is the code of ethics for the military. He doesn't like losing. He doesn't like being embarrassed. And he's the president of the United States. And I do believe he also knows the country is in trouble and the country has real enemies. And that's why he likes Mattis and Kelly and McMaster, because they'll wipe them out. Those are your two power structures that are going to end up winning with Donald Trump. The generals and the family. Put all your chips there. The generals should make him more predictable, and the family as well. You'll see, I think, this president start to settle into more of a predictable pattern, unless his win at all costs or just unpredictable side just cannot handle somebody like John Kelly. Jared Kushner, Ivanka Trump, Gary Cohn, Donald J. Trump Jr., they're liberals, they're progressives. If you're destroying the GOP, how are you going to get anything done? Now, I celebrate the fact that he's destroying the GOP. Good, they need to. But if he's destroying the GOP, how are you going to get anything passed? You need something passed. I believe Ivanka and Jared are deal makers. I believe those guys can meet with leaders of the other side and say, look, you guys have goals. We have goals. Our dad wants to make America great. He wants legislation on health care. The GOP couldn't get anything done. You've heard my dad. He believes in a single payer system that the government pays for. So there's lots of places here that we can get together. This won't really begin to happen until after 2018, when the GOP is completely destroyed and they've lost the House and or the Senate. When that happens, then you're going to see Ivanka becoming very, very important on Capitol Hill and Jared becoming popular on Capitol Hill and talking about progressive policies. That will, if the Democrats love their policies more than they hate Donald Trump, they will work with him. But that's a big if. Everybody just hates Donald Trump and they'll shoot. I mean, John McCain, he'll just shoot his own feet off. Doesn't matter. The next one is enforcement. We are a world at war, and the president likes enforcement. I'm sorry, You may disagree with me, but I do not believe the president was joking when he said to the police officers, you know what? You don't have to put your head on there. Just you don't have to treat them all so well if you're arresting criminals or illegals. I don't believe that he actually means, hey, go bloody their head up. But he is a guy who's like, get it done. And I'm less worried about you than I am them. What I believe is coming in 2018 is a war on the GOP and a war on the press. By 2020, it will be a war on the press, a war on the GOP, and the possibility of working together with the Democrats to try to get him to win 2020 for the next election. He needs to have wins. If the GOP doesn't get their act together and put some things on his desk that he can sign, they're in the dustbin of history. And you have a chance of a president moving liberal, progressive policies that are really at the core of who he is because of his children. That will come. The other thing, because the power structure is Mattis, Kelly, and McMaster, who I respect, and because of the way Syria, Iran, Russia, Turkey, ISIS, Afghanistan, North Korea, have I missed anybody who wants to kill us? Because those things are heating up, I believe you're going to see in the next 4 to 8 years serious war and serious enforcement from this president. Good or bad, that's what I think is coming. And the worse the conditions get on the ground in America and abroad, the more that enforcement arm will come into play. And the more the code of honor and loyalty will become. They will enforce the law, and I believe he believes they will enforce his will. Now this, every summer, burglary rates spike. I mean, do we need the Department of Justice to tell us this? Of course. Why? Because we're on vacation. That's why. When we leave our house for a week, that's when, I mean, burglars do not, especially, you know, in Texas, they do not want you to be at home when they break into your house. You guys seen the latest stats on guns and concealed carries? We are now, I think it's 8% of the population now carries a gun. 8%. If you take out California, New York, Illinois, it's like 10 or 12, isn't it, Stu? Did you see that stat yesterday? I mean, and you go to places like Texas, it might be 10 or 12 that's not armed. Anyway, burglars want to hit you when you're not at home. Now you can save a whopping $100 off of Simply Safe's summer package, their special summer burglary package. You're not going to believe how inexpensive it is to have the highest quality tools at your disposal. No wiring, no contracts, you own it. You can put it together in literally 30 minutes. I think they say an hour. I did it in 30 minutes in my house. It's not hard. There's no long-term contract, nothing to lock you in. The monitoring is about $15 a month. You cannot beat this deal. And right now, $100 off the system. All you have to do is go to simplysafebeck.com. Sale ends August 13th. Simplysafebeck.com. Go there now. Simplysafebeck.com.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
I'm really anxious and at the same time fearful of talking to Amy Fabrini, who is on with us next. She is the mother of two children that have been taken away from her because the state of Oregon declared that her and her partner are intellectually incapable of raising children. Now, the person that worked for the state who did the evaluation came back and said, no, they're not. They're very loving and it's fine. They're totally fine. She was fired by the state. And the speculation is because she was for keeping the children. The father of Amy is against her keeping the children. But does IQ stop? Is that a new banner here that if you have a low IQ, you can't raise your own children? Her IQ, by the way, is in the 70s. Really? You can't be a mother and in the 70s? We are headed towards a place where I think it was Oliver Wendell Holmes, the Supreme Court justice, that said three generations of idiots, or what was it?
Imbeciles.
Imbeciles. Three generations of imbeciles is enough. Sterilize them.
That was just after he'd met Jeffy. And right. So yeah, I would think that was somewhat understandable.
Right. At the time. What else? You can't make the decision medically, no matter how smart you are. You can't be informed if your children want to have an abortion. They're pregnant. They don't have to come to you. They come to the state. You know, the state thinks that something is wrong in your house. You lose your children. All because, hey, we've got to protect the children. Now, IQ. Well, if you have an IQ, you know, in the 70s, you shouldn't be a mother. And take her two children away. This is a tragic story. And America, is this really who we are? We talked to Amy and her advocate, Shireen, is going to be joining us here in their fight against the state of Oregon. We go there next.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
I am so bothered by this story. I think you will be too. There is a woman, Amy Fabrini. She just had a baby, and in her home are all of the unread children's books, the unworn baby clothes, a Winnie the Pooh blanket laying inside a crib where the baby has never slept. Amy Fabrini has an IQ of 72, which is not mentally handicapped. And the state of Oregon has deemed that she's not smart enough to have... She's not smart enough to have her own children. Even though the state worker that went in to investigate said there's no sign of abuse, there's no sign of neglect, and she's perfectly qualified to have and hold and love her children. Amy is not allowed to have her children. They are currently up for adoption. This is an injustice. Amy and the woman who actually worked for the state and did the analysis, but when she came back to the state and says, no, she should have her children, the state fired her. Trouble in the state of Oregon. We talked to Amy and her advocate right now.
The entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
In light of Charlie Gard and now Alfie Evans, and in the past it was Justine Pelletier, governments and hospitals are taking children from their parents. And we want to make sure that you are aware of this. We welcome Shireen Hagenbach, her mentor, and Amy Fabrini, the mother who is going through this in Oregon. Amy, how are you?
I'm doing good, thank you.
Tell me what's happening to you and what's happening to your children.
So Christopher, my oldest, he was taken into CPS custody almost 4 years ago, and we have been fighting the state for almost 4 years now to get him back, trying to be represented as best as we can, trying to get our story out there, trying to get a lawyer, an attorney that will represent us in court so we can get Christopher back. We have a trial coming up in December to terminate our rights for Christopher. And then Hunter, he was born in February. He was 2 days old. CPS came, took him right from the hospital. I didn't even get to bring him home. So since then, we've been fighting for him as well. We've been getting our story out there to try and find someone that can represent us so we can go up against the state to get our kids back. And we want our story out there so they know that you can get your kids back.
Amy. All right. Are you good, Mom?
I'm a wonderful mother. I love my boys. I would do anything for my boys.
Sorry, this has caught me off guard. I have a daughter of special needs. And so this is... caught me off guard. I'm sorry to be emotional with you. What does it feel like to now have to be on national radio with people discussing your IQ and saying that you're not smart enough to be a mom?
It's been hard, but it's worth it to get my story out there so that people know that you can get your kids back as long as you just fight. Fight for everything you have because your kids are worth it.
Has a lawyer stepped up to help you yet, Amy?
I have a court-appointed attorney and an appeals attorney, but I would like to see if I could find someone that's out of state that can better represent me.
Shireen.
Yeah.
How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing good. Thank you.
You worked for the state of Oregon?
So, yes, actually, I was a volunteer. So I'm a professional mediator by trade, and I went there to just volunteer my time in the community. And because of my credentials and education, they put me in the role of a caseworker that came into the home and observed visitations with the children.
And what did you observe?
Well, first I should preface this with I've had over 20 years experience working with children, youth, and families. So my undergrad is in psychology, and I have a ton of certificates regarding safety and health and abuse. And what I found when I came into the home is a home. I found two parents that just loved their child. It was just Christopher at the time. It was last summer. And definitely my first impression was that Amy in particular didn't speak to me very much. She was very insecure.
She didn't what?
she didn't speak to me at first. It took about 4 weeks at least to gain her trust in me as a caseworker. And once she felt comfortable with me in the home, you know, it was clear to see that she had had years of, you know, just this unhealthy relationship between her and the state of Oregon when they came in. So, you know, I just had to build that trust up with her. But I just saw a loving environment. There was, you know, they've got the same dog apparently for the last 5 years. There's really nothing going on at all that I discovered other than maybe they were depressed, and you know, that was the only thing that I could see. And obviously, if they had their children back, that depression would have lifted. Yeah. In the 10 months that I've worked with her after, she's just, I mean, she's got her voice now. She's fighting. She's, you know, she's really looking for more of an advocate, because we live in a small town here. And that's been the hardest thing for me, is one, to speak out against Child Protective Services and care for my family. My stepdad is a lawyer and judge in town, and my mom's got a pretty high position, so I wanted to protect them, but also stand up for people that don't feel like they have a voice and they're not being heard. So I'm pretty much the lone star out here. and their attorneys are representing them, but, you know, they all know each other here. So, I know that they're not being, fought for properly.
So, can you hang on just a second? I need to take a quick break. I'm going to come back with a, after a commercial break, we'll continue our conversation. In fact, Pat, if you wouldn't mind, if you could, mm-hmm. you and Stu could do this commercial for me.
Stu, you got these blinds, right, from blinds.com?
I do. In my,
you can kind of walk us through that process.
In my family room, I am not much for the aesthetics of homes, necessarily, but my wife goes crazy when... did you ever...
Wait, you're not like a interior designer?
No, she sort of is.
Really? It's kind of weird.
And one of the big complaints she had when we moved into her house was was the blinds in our family room. You know, you spend most of your time in a room like that. Mm-hmm. And so we talked to blinds.com and went through a bunch of options. And actually, we were going to go with, shockingly, my wife chose the most expensive blinds on the website, which was a stunner. And so instead, they actually said, well, you know what? Those are great, but we have another option here that's just as good, and it's actually cheaper. And so we got these really nice shutters for that room, and it completely changes the vibe of the room.
Oh, my gosh.
It really does.
It absolutely... It takes the house from a house to a home.
It really does.
I mean, it's really, really, it makes all the difference in the world. So every order gets free shipping. Now through August 21st, you get huge site-wide savings plus an additional 5% off. When you use the promo code BECK, whether it's one room or your whole house, just go to blinds.com. Use the promo code BECK for an additional 5% off their huge site-wide sale. Blinds.com, promo code BECK, rules and restrictions apply.
Glenn Beck program.
888-727 back.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck program.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking about Amy Fabrini, who the state has decided, the state of Oregon, that she does not have a high enough IQ to be able to have her two children. Her first child was taken from her. After being fine in the home and living for 2 or 3 years with mom and dad, and her second child has just been taken from her at the hospital at birth. Go ahead, Amy. Did I get something wrong?
Yeah. Christopher was only in our home for like 4 days when CPS came in and took him.
So, Amy, wow. what is the thing, talking to the mother, who, remember, is not smart enough to have her own children, according to the state of Oregon, Amy, what caused this? Why did the state come over to your house? What was the complaint?
The initial complaint was that we had an ex-friend that was living with us, and they called CPS and reported that the father, Eric Ziegler, had been neglecting Christopher. He hadn't been picking up on his cues. He wasn't cleaning him properly. And then there was also put in the report that he wasn't properly feeding our dog. That was the first report, and that's why CPS came in and took Christopher.
Okay, and so the woman who came out, Shireen, you were the person that came out with that report?
I am not the first person that came out with the initial report.
Okay, and what did that first report say? That report took the child away?
Yeah, the first report was called in supposedly by a roommate of theirs. And the second report was actually from Amy's father, who was upset that she decided to move in with the father of her child. Okay. So they've just gone with that for, you know, the last almost 4 years now.
Okay, now, Shireen, you have been with Amy over the last couple of years. You see her quite often or not?
Yes, so I was placed in the home as a volunteer. I gave my time. So I was placed in the home last May of 2016 and performed weekly visitations for 3 hours apiece with Amy, Eric, and their child, Christopher.
Over the last year.
So it was from May of 2016 until August of 2016 when their attorney asked for my observations because Child Protective Services was not releasing them.
And Amy, when was the birth date of your second child?
February 16th of 2017.
February of 2017?
Yes.
So... Amy, I have to ask you a tough question because this is what the people who are against you say, that you didn't know that you were pregnant until you had your child, and they find that unreasonable. It has happened before with people who are supposedly intelligent, but it is difficult to not know that you're pregnant. Can you tell me about that? Is that true? What happened?
So I didn't know I was pregnant with Christopher, and I didn't. All I thought was because I have kidney issues. It's been passed down through my family. So when I was getting these pains in my side, I just thought it was my kidneys acting up. I had no indications that I was pregnant. I didn't have any movement or anything.
And when you had when you weren't having your period, is that normal for you?
Yes.
Were you growing in size? Did you look pregnant?
No.
Shireen, can you help me out on that?
Yeah. So Amy's figure is just... it's just always been the same ever since I've met her, actually. And when I came into the home last summer, she actually, we didn't know at the time, but she was just beginning, you know, her pregnancy for the second child. And she's stayed the same since the first time I've met her until today. She looks exactly the same. So, and she did give birth in February. I'm not sure, how big are you? What is your size about?
We don't have to get into that. Please. Let's.
Yeah, so it's something where you just can't, you don't notice. It's just, it's the way that she's built. But she did know she was pregnant with Hunter, the second child. And we discussed extensively about her coming forward. But they just had an incredible amount of fear that the state would take their child.
Which they did.
Yeah.
So your aunt, Amy, agrees with you and your husband and Shireen that...
Yes, it does.
Your children are now up for adoption by the state.
Christopher is.
How do you feel about that?
I don't feel it's right. He shouldn't be put up for adoption.
he should be with us. It's completely wrong.
Shireen and Amy, how can we help you? Is there anything, first of all, that I've missed?
Well, I would like to advocate that Amy and Eric have remained together. They live in a 3-bedroom, 2-bath home. It's owned by Eric's father. And they've taken extensive courses on parenting, what abuse and neglect looks like, health and fitness. I mean, they are very proactive in showing the courts that they want to learn what they want them to learn, and that, and they're proving to the courts and to everybody around here that they're very capable of learning. They're, the IQ that is given, you know, is debatable anyways. That can be subjective to depression, all kinds of things. So, but she's very articulate. They're very sweet. They're very kind. And what could help them is finding good representation to help them advocate for their rights to have their children. That is truly what we're looking for this family.
How do they get in touch? How do they get in touch with you?
They can go to either my website, or they can contact me via email.
Okay, I can give you that. Give me the information right now. Yeah.
Okay, so my website is www.actionnow.com, but it's spelled with a K, so it's ACATIONNOW.com. Okay. And my email address is support@actionnow.com.
Shireen, thank you for... you know, you're in a small town, and you have apparently a very visible family, and it takes guts to stand up and to do it with class and grace, and it sounds like you're doing that, and God bless you for standing up. Amy, Fabrini, we will not forget you, and we will further this story on any platform that I have to do with, and I will do everything I can to help you out. And I wish you all of the best, and we'll talk to you again soon. Back in just a second. God bless you.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. Is the Glenn Beck Program.
On a personal note, if you just joined us, we did an interview with a mother of 2 children in Oregon that have just been taken. One of them had been taken from them a few years ago. They have been fighting to get their child back. Mother and father. Father has a borderline on the higher end IQ of mental disability, 66. Mom has the IQ of 72. I don't know what you expected her to sound like, but she sounded perfectly normal to me. She is a mother who loves her children. Sorry, this is... this hits close to home. I have a daughter with cerebral palsy who is a wonderful and would make the best mother ever. And I can't imagine what it would be like to have to defend your intelligence and have everyone calling you stupid, when most likely that's the way you have felt your whole life anyway, and all of the cruel remarks that probably came your way through your whole life.
to now have a child and have it taken from you at the hospital when there is no sign of abuse nor neglect is an injustice that is beyond comprehension to me. As I started this break, on a personal note, last night, I have these sweet women who come to the studios and they pray. And they pray for us and they pray for me. And they were in my studios or my office last night. And we had such a great conversation. And the last thing they said was, what can we pray for you? And I said two things, and I would like to ask you to pray for the second thing more than the first. But I said empathy and courage. We can't solve anything unless we can feel one another, unless we really have empathy for what people are going through, and we can stop seeing things through the prism of policies or even the Constitution, but start to feel where other people are. I need more empathy for people. And I've been praying for that gift. But at the same time, I know that we will find things like Amy. And I need the courage and the spine to be able to walk through it, and not because it's difficult, but because it's hard on the heart after a while. And so if you would join us in that prayer, I'd appreciate it. So what they're looking for is an attorney that can represent them. They're in a small town, and it sounds a little incestuous, this town. I know I don't mean to speak ill of this town. I don't know anything about it. But we all know how small towns are and can be. And once people make their mind up about a person, it's hard to reverse that. I found very early on the great joy, which I, in some ways, was so hard, and I didn't like it, moving away from my family in my own hometown. You become that, whatever people have known you as. You know, I was, you know, I to my sisters, I was their stinky little brother, and you know, you just grow up, and people have this image of you. By going away, you can start fresh. And so I don't know Amy's story in this small little town and what they thought of Amy. But I know what the state worker thought when they went in and they found no abuse and no neglect. So we need somebody. And would Kelly Shackelford, would this be something, he's what, is the Liberty Council? I mean, he does more religious freedom, but he might know somebody that could take on a case like this.
Yeah, it would be interesting to hear. I mean, because there's a lot to this story, but if you back off out for a second, and I don't mean to get scientific, but it's like, this is just completely bonkers. Like, this woman, you expected to hear something completely different from that interview. At least I did.
We never...
And I know you. It's totally judging a book by its cover, but...
We had never talked to her before.
No.
Our phone screeners had never talked to her. Our producer had not talked to her. Talked to the mentor or the state advocate who was her state advocate until the state fired her. Talked to her,
But we didn't, I mean, I did not expect that conversation.
It's similar to the Charlie Gard thing in a way that, you know, there is a line you can find with a story like this, where if they are so disabled that they can't do basic functions of life, there may be, you know, there's an argument to have. This is not that case. I mean, she's smarter than 80% of the people I interact with on a daily basis.
And they're taking parenting classes, and they're, and his parents are around, and they have help, and the people are aware of them. I mean, this is why you, I mean, I will tell you, I feel like adopting their children and building a house next to mine and giving them the house, and we would be the adoptive parents, but we would be right next to them, and they could keep the, I mean, that's what families are supposed to do, not state. That's what the family is supposed to do. You have your child live close enough to where the grandparents help. You don't just take the children away. And again, the state found no evidence of neglect.
And it's important to note, too, IQ is one of those things that has been beaten into our heads for decades and decades and decades as this actual measure of intelligence that it has some level of accuracy to it. There's no real, you cannot decipher. These are not accurate enough measures to decipher the difference between someone who has a 72 and a 78 IQ. Listen, this is from a Canadian university. Dr. Adrian Owen did a huge study, the largest study ever on IQ and the accuracy of it. He was the senior investigator and the Canadian Excellent Research Chair in Cognitive Neuroscience and Imaging at the university's Brain and Mind Institute. When we looked at the data, the bottom line is the whole concept of IQ, or of you having a higher IQ than me, is a myth. There is no such thing as a single measure of IQ or a measure of general intelligence. And we're taking people's children away based on some random test they took on some day, some number that has no real basis in science anyway. And just the sniff test here. You listen to this woman speak, and blatantly she has the intelligence to raise children. How many people have you met in your life and you think, God, those people should not have children? This is not one of them. I mean, this is an absolute horror show, a complete outrage. And I mean, how have we not heard more about this story? How does she not have the help that she needs? I mean, look, you might look deeper into the story and find something that indicates something different. But I mean, so far we have not found it. And I think just by on his face, you listen to that interview. If you heard that interview, there were times, and you could not tell the difference if it was the mother or the mentor speaking.
There was at least one time that happened. I wanted to ask who's speaking.
Yeah.
I could not tell the one who had their master's in, what did she say it was? And the one who just graduated from high school, the one whose kids are being taken away because they're not smart enough, and the one who has all the degrees and certificates to be hired and sent in by the state to do family counseling and observations. I mean, when you can't tell the difference between the two, there's a problem.
And do we live in a country in which the state decides whether they will allow you to have your children? Or do we live in a country in which they are your children, and with the most incredible exceptions and incredible circumstances would the state even consider stepping in into a parent-child relationship? That is the country we're supposed to live in. And if we live in I know Oregon's a lot different than other states, and maybe this wouldn't happen in other states. I don't know. But this is a complete outrage on its face.
So here's what I want to say to you. My aunt was, she married an abuser. And he wasn't abusing her at first. Not physically, before they got married. Mentally, he was. My grandfather spotted him a mile away. And all the way down the aisle, my aunt told me, my dad, I thought at the time, just wrecked my ceremony. Because Grandpa was walking her down the aisle and said, please, please, Joanne, don't do this. Please don't do this. Please don't marry him.
please turn around right now and come with me. Please, I'm your father, I'm begging you. And she said, Dad, stop it. When they got to the end of the aisle, he kissed her on the cheek and said, I will always be your father and I will always be there, but I cannot be there to watch my daughter be abused. When you are done, you let me know. And he gave her to this abuser. She would come over to my grandfather's house from time to time with a black eye or whatever, and she'd come crying to my grandmother, her mother. And Grandpa would answer the door, and his heart would break. And he would look at her, and he'd hug her, and she would cry. And then he would look at her and say, are you done yet? She'd say, Dad, no, you don't. He stopped listening, and he'd walk away. And Grandma would spend the time. Until that time came when she came home and said, Dad, I'm done. We never saw the abuser again. He went away. And they had a very easy divorce. I think it involved my grandfather and the man who became my uncle and her husband later, showing up at his door with a shotgun or two, but I could be wrong. But here's why I tell you that story. Are you done yet? Are you done yet? Are we done arguing politics? Are we done making that the center of our universe? Because I'm done. I'm so done. That's not getting us anywhere. This we can make a difference on. This we can do. This is a noble cause. This is something we should be spending our time on. I'll pick this up tomorrow, but today I just want to ask you that question. Are you done yet? If you are, when you are, let me know. Because we have to focus on other things. And now this, Delta Defense in Las Vegas, a woman was viciously beaten by her boyfriend. Oh, jeez. When she started to run, she was followed by him. In the ensuing chaos, bystander intervened. The bystander shot him. The cops show up. Who was arrested? The guy with a gun. This is the reality of people who are brave enough to defend themselves or others. And we don't think of the moment after we pull the trigger. We just think of the moment leading up to it. But you better think about after, because you're going to be arrested and your life can be a living hell for 3 years and it would cause bankruptcy. We have insurance for fires and floods, but do you have insurance at all for you being the protector? I want you to call the USCCA. It's an invaluable resource for armed Americans before, during, and after a self-defense incident. Don't leave your future up to chance. Visit protectanddefend.com. Discover what the USCCA can do for you. And as an extra bonus, new members automatically entered to win a free gun. Details at protectanddefend.com. But it ends soon. That's protectanddefend.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
All right, where is this family from? As we're starting to put information together, the Redmond couple. Where is Redmond, Oregon? It's a small town. What's it close to? Isn't rural Oregon very, very blue and red on the other side? I want to find out about this. We're going to pick this story up tomorrow. Next, some really good stuff. Some people who are absolutely amazing standing in the fire. The Christians of the Middle East who are standing up. You want to talk about courage?
Tom Doyle joins us next.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Boy, there's a lot to talk about today. The outrageously wrong climate predictions. You know, Paul Ryan saying he's sure they're going to stick on this landing when it comes to tax reform. Of course, all of the stuff that was going on yesterday at the White House, the Debbie Wasserman Schultz, that story is crazy and nobody is covering it. We're actually working on a chalkboard for that one. When you see that one really laid out, it's going to boggle your mind. Stu's been looking at some of the details on this one. It's going to blow your mind how... something's wrong. Something's big time wrong. Also, record high for the stock market. Greenspan came out yesterday and said, hey, nothing wrong with the stock market, but boy, have you seen those bonds lately? What does that mean? Well, if you have a pension or you live in a city, that's bad. Really, really bad. So what are you going to do about it? Let's begin there right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the program. Scaramucci was escorted out the door yesterday, so we know he can do the Fandango, which is wonderful. I'm kind of upset because we just got in, you know, we just got into our audio vault. This... will you do the Fandango? Because we thought we could, you know, use that, and now it's...
No,
we just got
it
today, or yesterday,
and it's over.
It's over. Come on.
Well, man. It was 11 full days. I was getting a little tired of him, you know?
11 days.
11 days.
The time window is tightening. It's like every day. Like, I feel like it used to be like a crazy story every year, then it was a crazy story every 6 months, then it was three, and it's two. Now it's like every 10 days? I mean...
Oh, no. In the world, or you just mean the White House?
I just mean the White House generally.
Okay, yeah, about every 10 days. Well, every 5 to 10 days. But a crazy story every single day now. And I don't think we just have one crazy story.
Just yesterday, we got Scaramucci leaving. We got that Trump reportedly dictated the Donald Trump Jr. statement.
That's so bad. If you're a fan of Donald Trump, this is real trouble. This is real trouble.
They're denying it, by the way.
I know.
So
I know.
Who knows? But
if it, but if it turns out to be true, it's enough to where now the federal investigation will go all the way to Donald Trump. And, you know, if he was actually, and that shows there is what, a leak from Air Force One. If that indeed does pan out to be true, this could be something that is now, you know, part of a cover-up or whatever. It's just going to get worse. It's just going to get worse. So we had that yesterday. What else did we miss yesterday?
And we had the story today that there was this, via a lawsuit filed by the investigator, that this Seth Rich story was being fed to... there was a meeting with Sean Spicer. There was reported, according to the lawsuit, potential contact with the president, though that's not...
It says it in a memo. Whether the memo is true or not, we don't know yet. But in one of the memos, it says the president is aware of all this and, you know, would like you to further this story.
A text, series of texts. And very close contact with Fox News on that story. What's interesting about it is if you remember the Seth Rich story that came up right after Comey was fired, the idea that he was his he had a role in leaking to WikiLeaks, so it wasn't the Russian connection as far as trying to hack the election.
Right. It
so
was the DNC that was trying this yeah, operative from the DNC that was doing it.
And then he wound up being killed, right? So the only piece of evidence on this to make this into a story was an investigator who was working with the family who said, yes, there is a connection between Seth Rich and WikiLeaks. That investigator is the guy filing the lawsuit. So he has texts, he has voicemails from operatives behind the scenes, and Sean Spicer has admitted he did meet with the operative who was working on this particular story. He's a guy who's been on, you know, Fox and on this network and on many, many times. We don't know. He's denying it. So we don't know what it is. But again, it's just another gigantic twist in the story, and it's so fast. It's to the point that Pat pointed out yesterday at the end of the show, we hadn't even talked about Reince Priebus the entire show. It was our first show since he was fired. We hadn't even mentioned it the entire show. That is, I mean, it's a pace we've never seen before.
No, it's an overwhelming of the system from all angles. I mean, I don't think we actually had the conversation yesterday as well, first time since it had happened, that North Korea could hit New York City with a nuclear missile. We're not talking Scud missiles. We're talking an ICBM.
Then there's the highly unusual submarine activity that the military has now been made aware
of. Okay, so here's what happens. When you open up the sub doors, okay, so you open up the submarine doors to launch a missile out of it. It has to blow air out of that while the missile is launching so it doesn't burn the inside of the ship down. And so I don't know exactly how it works, but it ejects all of that stuff as the missile is coming out and pushes all the heat and everything else out. Well, the what's happening with the missiles there or with the subs, the North Korean subs, many of them are old, et cetera, but they're starting in the last month or so, they're testing all of those systems on their subs. And we're catching them testing missile launches without launching missiles. That's a very big deal and highly unusual. Why are you doing that?
It is overwhelming the system, and I don't know that it's anything intentional by anyone. But man, you get overwhelmed by this stuff. You feel like this huge. I mean, Scaramucci resigning yesterday is insane. Guy was just hired as the answer 10 days earlier, and he's leaving. And by the next day, you're just like on to the next story. Is really, I don't know if it's a social media phenomenon. I don't know what it is.
And so where does this even fit? Have you seen the Jeff Flake, you know, my party is in denial about?
Yeah, it's amazing that, you know, this is it's an op-ed he wrote, which is actually part of his book.
Yeah.
He's saying he's in denial about Donald Trump. The party is in denial about Donald Trump. And he signed his name to it.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of these comments that have floated throughout the media since he was elected from unnamed officials.
Now, Jeff Flake, I'm trying to remember where we lost track of Jeff Flake, when Jeff Flake sold his soul.
We were not a fan of his stance on one of the gun bills, I remember.
But
it's been immigration.
An immigration.
Yeah, immigration, yeah. He really kind of, yeah, he was really, really great. And then he started selling his soul to the party.
To be fair, he still is good on certain things. I mean, you know, his spending, he's pretty good on.
Was he ever for Trump?
I would say he was
agnostic.
No, I would say he was more on the I'm not a fan of Trump side. He was one of the more consistent on that. However, public officials, particularly senators, taking public positions against the president is pretty notable. It's not as notable as if, like, you know, one of his big allies came out and took him on. He's definitely on the side. He's not a fan of Trump's.
Our forebears knew that keeping a republic meant, above all, keeping it safe from foreign transgressors. They all knew people could not live and work freely and develop national institutions conceived conductive to freedom, except in peace with independence. So where should Republicans go from here? First, we shouldn't hesitate to speak out if the president plays to his base in ways that damage the Republican Party's ability to grow and speak to a larger audience. So listen to that. I mean, he's putting the party. Second,
Republicans need to take the long view when it comes to issues like free trade. Populist and protectionist policies may play well out in the short term, but they handicap the country in the long term. Third, Republicans need to stand up for the institutions and prerogatives like the Senate filibuster that served us well for more than two centuries. We've taken our institutions conductive to freedom, as Goldwater put it, for granted, and we have to engage in one of the more reckless periods of politics in our history. In 2017, we seem to have lost our appreciation for just how hard won and vulnerable those institutions are. Well, it's nice to have you to the party, Jeff.
It seemed almost dismissive. I almost got a sense that that was dismissive.
I'm so done with. Huh, I'm really? So done yeah. with. I'm really so done with all of the politicians. I mean, honestly, should we have any politician on here? I'm politician agnostic now, with an exception of very, very few.
You're not sure you believe they exist?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm unfortunately, I know they exist. I'm not sure how many. I'm agnostic on how many good ones exist. I know one. I know Mike Lee. I'd swear by Mike Lee. But what does that mean?
I mean, there's certainly a few.
Yeah, and there are a few, and I like a few of them. Mm-hmm. But the only one I really know personally, really well, I feel, is Mike Lee. And unshakable.
And he is
Ben Sasse. I mean, we don't know him that well.
Ben Sasse?
We know Ben Sasse.
Yeah, I like Ben Sasse.
I like him a lot.
I think there's several of them.
Lou Gohmert?
Yeah, there's several of them. So I'm not throwing,
Hank
all
Johnson?
Of them out.
But, yes.
Yes.
With his concerns
that goes
for Guam.
That goes yes.
obviously.
That goes
without
saying. Debbie there. Wasserman Schultz.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you guys aren't helping.
No, but I think you're right. Obviously, there are some that are...
There are many there, and I hate to abandon them, but I'm just so done. I'm just so done with them that I'm not... Well, why would I stick my neck out for any of you? Why would I endorse or help or anything? Because I don't know what you guys are going to do when you get in.
You know, you're never going to know that, though. People are flawed. And,
I know.
The problem here is the second you take that attitude, or all of us take that attitude,
then you're done.
Then there is an unrestrained move to the dark side.
Yeah.
You have to have people who at least standing up. And, you get some things and you lose a lot of them. You just hope to slow that roll a little bit towards the progressive side. It's really all you can do. But we can't... It's like the Second Amendment. I always think there was a time, because I'm not a gun guy. I did not grow up in gun culture by any means, though I believe in the Second Amendment. And there was a time where I would hear some of the arguments, made by gun advocates, and they seemed almost irrational to me. Like they would, as a guy who just never dealt with guns, like why are you defending that kind of gun? Like to me, on its face, without thinking about it deeply, it just kind of seems irrational. You're just defending anything that has to do with guns.
Yeah.
You have to defend anything that has to do with guns, because the second you let them past that barrier, they go to the next barrier. So you better stand up there and defend every single freaking thing, because the second they get past that wall, they are onto the next one, and they'll trample the next 50 walls past it. Wherever you set up your defense is where they will stop for the time being.
Yes.
So you better set it up as aggressively as possible.
Yes. And that comes to this. New survey shows most millennials don't really know what religious liberty even means.
Oh, I believe that.
Oh, totally.
Oh, wait
that.
Until you see this. We'll share
I believe that.
That
wholeheartedly.
Share that next. And then at the bottom of the hour, we go to Tom Doyle, who has written a book called Standing in the Fire. It is about the Christians who are living in some of the most frightening times since probably the Dark Ages. And they are standing up in the Middle East. And Tom Doyle will tell us a little bit about these amazing people. Sponsor this half hour is Goldline. Economics professor from Yale says what he's seeing in the market is the quiet before the storm. Now, yesterday, Greenspan came out and said, there's nothing to the stock market. That's all legitimate. No, it's not. I mean, that's crazy. But he wants to warn people about the bond market. What the hell does that even mean? I'll tell you what it means. If you have a pension, your pensions are put into bonds. And the state or whoever is selling those bonds, and then people buy them because they're like, oh, no, they'll last forever. This city will be around forever. It's going to be great. How about your investment in bonds? Your pensions are invested in bonds because they're, quote, safe. Well, there is a gigantic bubble that people have been warning about for about 5 years. When this bubble pops, it means your city, your state won't have the money in bonds. Remember when you said, oh, yeah, we want that school. Just put a school bond out there. That means people bought that bond, believed you were good for it, and so that money was available. The minute that bond market goes down, that money's no longer available. Then what do you do? This is going to affect your city. This is going to affect your town. This is going to massively impact your future, your 401k, your IRA, your pension. God forbid you have one. That's what this means. When that happens, then what? Pat was telling us yesterday about a bank, it was Citibank, that came to him. I can't believe this is what they said, but, oh, you know what? The banks are going to release $4 trillion really soon. That's going to get the economy pumping. Is that what they said, Pat?
Yeah, it was Chase, actually, but yes. Okay. So I said, wow, $4 trillion released at the same time, probably not going to be good for the inflation rate. Oh, well, they're going to be really judicious about how
strategic,
how strategic they are.
Within a minute, it was they're going to release it all at one time and it's going to really soup up the market.
Mm-hmm.
Pat said inflation. Well, no,
no, they're going to control the velocity.
Yeah, of course they are. Uh-huh. Of course they are. They always do. All right. May I suggest you get something that never goes to zero, and that is gold.
Velcro.
Gold. 866-465-3546. 866-465-3546. For as little as $2,500, you're going to get 3 months of price protection, all the way up to a year's worth of price protection for a $25,000 investment. Means if gold goes down in the next year, you don't lose a dime.
Can you imagine if a car industry did that? Or
anybody.
Housing anybody. Or anybody.
Anybody. Guarantee your price for a year.
Never seen it before.
Make sure you read their important risk information. Find out if buying gold or silver is right for you. 1-866-GOLDLINE. 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck.
The fusion of entertainment. And enlightenment.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. 888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to the program. So there's a new survey that shows most millennials don't know what religious liberty is. They think religious freedom is a choice. And given the two following statements, 58% of millennials are 13% more secular than older generations, agreed with the statement that religion is personal and it should not play a role, a significant role, in society. 58%. Okay. They were given then these two statements. There is a difference between a business serving people equally and forcing a business to participate in a ceremony that violates their religious belief. We should respect religious freedom of these people. That's statement number one. Statement number two. There is no difference between illegal discrimination and a business person refusing to provide services to things like a gay wedding ceremony for religious reasons. We should enforce anti-discrimination laws against these people. While 95% people claimed to believe religious freedom is important, only 50% identified with the first statement and 49% identified and agreed with the second statement. There's a few things we need to take care of, and really politics is not one of them. We need to find ways to shore up the Constitution and start teaching the Constitution and educating those who want to be educated on the truth, and then helping them find new ways to reach out to their friends and help them understand why these things are important.
people do not rise to the level of their expectation. They rise to the level of their education and their preparation. Nobody has an education. They're not going to rise. If there is a serious violation in one of the constitutional amendments, Bill of Rights, they're not going to know. There's no preparation and there's no education. They will not rise up to protect or defend something they don't even know what it is. Many people, half of them, think that they are siding with the Constitution when they agree with, you know, statement number two. They're not, but they don't even know that. Back in a minute with some people who actually are oppressed, the Christians in the Middle East.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
We're really honored to have Tom Doyle in with us in studio. He is the Vice President and Middle East Central Asia Director for E3 Partners, which is based here in Dallas.
That's right, in Plano.
He has written several books. One of them has just come out, Standing in the Fire, Courageous Christians Living in Frightening Times. Good to have you here, Tom.
Great to be here, Glenn.
Tell me. I want you to take us through a couple of stories. Let's start on There's No Place Like Homs. Mm-hmm. What is Homs?
Homs is one of the major cities in Syria, and Fareed is a Christian that lives there, and it's devastated after this six-year civil war. About 80% of the city's gone. It looks like Berlin or Dresden, Germany after World War II.
Yeah.
But Fareed is out there sharing the gospel. He's looking at the political situation, but saying there's really spiritual answers here. And so right. He is motivated to reach out to people. But there's a man that has been threatening him for 5 years and promised to kill him. His name is Rashid. 5 years, he's written him notes, texts, emails, even wrote 30 death threats on the front of his apartment and numbered them. This is what we're going to do to you. This is what we'll do to your wife. This is what we'll do to your family. And so this is coming, but one day Fareed decides to do something that only makes sense in an Arab culture, Glenn. He goes to visit that man that's threatening him at his house. Now, we would think, how could you do that?
Well, Texans would do that with a gun.
That's right. Right. That's how that right. would work, right?
Right?
But you go there, and because they're Arabs, even his enemy has to invite him in. He would be so disgraced in his community if you and I have something against each other and you knock on my door and I don't invite you in. I would be ostracized in the community.
Wow.
Someone came to your door, you didn't let him in, so the man lets him in.
That would happen with Marcus Luttrell, right? He went to
that whole community was, if you see a stranger come to your village and needs help and you don't offer them help and protect them, then the entire city falls apart. I mean, then the whole tribe, that's what that tribe was about.
Yeah. So in America, you knock on someone's door and they probably don't answer it. But in the Middle East, they have to answer it
right.
and invite you in. And he does and promises to stop threatening Fareed and all of that. And so it ends up that Fareed is really smart. And he's thinking, he gives a gift to the family as he leaves. He says, I want to give this gift to your family. He gives him a copy of the Bible. And Rashid looks at it, Glenn, like it's radioactive contaminant, takes it with two fingers and sets it over, doesn't want to look at it. End of the conversation, awkward ending, he leaves, and that's it.
Now, this guy that he was visiting, Muslim, why was he threatening Fareed in the first place?
Because Fareed has seen a lot happen. Muslims are leaving Islam and coming to faith in Christ. And so leaders within cities and different branches of the religion do not like that.
Right,
there's a back door, even though it's called the religion of the back door, there is a back door.
Okay.
And so he leaves the Bible. And again, the texts keep coming. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to do this to you. But weeks later, Rashid asks to meet with Fareed, and he goes and visits him. And Fareed just challenges him and says, you know what? I'm so tired of these threats. 5 years you told me you wanted to kill me. You want to kill me? Here's your chance. I'm in your house. Go ahead. Kill me. I know where I'm going. I'm going to heaven. You don't make me tremble with fear. And Rashid says, I don't want to kill you. I want to talk to you. And he picks up the Bible and says, one night the bombs were dropping in homes. There was just mass chaos. I was reading the Quran, no help there. I set it aside, picked up the Bible at 7 p.m. and started reading. And at 6 a.m. in the morning, I looked up at the clock and realized I'd been reading through the night. I was finding out about Jesus, and he was about love, and all that was around me was hate. And I decided I need some change. It ends up that Rashid becomes a believer in Christ, leaves his religion, and is being mentored, discipled by Fareed. And actually, the man that wrote all these threatening notes, Glenn, is writing beautiful Christian worship music now. It's a miracle.
How now? He's marked. He's got to be marked.
For he death. Is. He is.
Yeah. All right. There's another story that you tell about a Muslim worker who was working for the secret police.
Yes.
In Syria.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. So that's Mohammed, and Mohammed is a pretty bad dude. In Syria, everybody fears the secret police. When we've been there, Glenn, the estimates are that 60% of the people in Syria have connections to the secret police. So you're not in the secret police, but your brother is. So that's all connected, and there's several branches. They check on each other. So it's just this web. It's Cold War Russia in an Arab country is what it really is. And so he's pretty feared man. But finally, one of his friends is killed by Assad. Now, think about this. Bashar Assad is an Alawite. That's not a Muslim. That's a split-off group from Islam. But this man, Mohammed, is a Muslim. One of his friends is killed. He doesn't want to go with ISIS, but he thinks that's it. I'm out of here. They end up going to Jordan. And a friend of mine, the first time he saw him, Rami, he went to deliver food to him. He's a refugee, like the millions of others of Syrian refugees that are all around the world. He's just a refugee. In Syria, he had status. Pretty feared person. Now, he's nothing. He's a name on the list, got a wife and kids, and he's waiting for food handouts. And so Rami goes to visit him. And he said to me, Tom, without question, this is the man that I have feared the most in my life. When I handed him the food at his little tent, he glared at me like he could see through me. If that guy had a knife, I would be dead. There was so much hatred there. And here I'm just giving his family some food.
And why did he hate him so much?
Because first, he was a Christian. And he knew that he was a Christian. And so, you know, here, Mohammed's a committed Muslim. I don't want to take anything from a Christian, but I have to. My family can't eat. So he takes it. Well, it ends up, he's telling his wife about this Rami and says, this guy, if he had a knife, I'd be gone. You know, forget it. The next week, he's looking at his list, Rami, and he realizes he's got to go to Mohammed's house again, his wife, Manara. And he thinks, are you kidding me? And he goes and delivers, same glare, just evil, just so angry at him. But somehow God moves and changes the situation. Mohammed's wife falls down some stairs. Her name is Manara. Breaks her leg in three places. As a refugee, zero. You have nothing there. There's no hospital to go to. There's nothing. It's all for pay. They have no money. He picks up the phone and he calls Rami. He gets his number somehow and says, Rami, my wife's in agony crying. Her leg is broken. It's obvious. We have to go to the hospital. I don't know anybody to talk to. You're my only friend in life.
And the guy who was glaring at him.
Yes. And Rami says, okay, I'd hate to be his enemy. I'm his friend? Are you kidding me? Takes him to the hospital, ends up a Christian group, pays for it. And it ends up just through the kindness and the love of Christians reaching out. And some of them in America, Glenn, he starts to read the Bible. Maybe this religion I'm in, maybe I need to take another look at this Jesus person. Maybe I need to back off what I believed and investigate this. And it ends up that he too comes to faith in Christ and is not leaving. You know, we hear about this exodus of Christians from the Middle East, Muslims that are, we would say, converting, becoming followers of Christ. many of them are staying because they believe the answers in their country to the problems are spiritual.
And a lot of them, too, are these are original homes for refugees. I mean, 2,000 years ago, this is where the Christians went for refuge.
That's right.
And so these are massive historic sites. And the Christians I meet there, they're like, we cannot abandon. Exactly. This is holy land. We cannot abandon this.
That's right. Those are the first days of the gospel as it just went out from Jerusalem. Right. And you look at Jordan and Syria and Lebanon and those places. Great spiritual history. And the Christians are anchored to that history.
So how does this make you feel when you go and you see this and then you come back home?
Wow. You know, Glenn, we always go there to encourage them.
Yeah, I know.
But then it flip it around, and we just realize they have so much more. You know, think about the average church in America. But when Muslims there are considering Jesus as Savior, they're asked two questions. Are you willing to suffer for him if you leave Islam? Two, are you ready to die for Jesus? Can you imagine that if those were two questions in the new members class in our churches here? Yeah, I think that would thin the ranks.
They kind of are, but you don't think of them as real. Are you willing to suffer for his name and take it? Yeah, yeah. You willing to die? Yeah, 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 yeah. Let's go.
In America, you'd have to make the refreshments way better to get people in the door.
Right.
Yeah.
But they actually mean it the way it was always really, truly, traditionally
it's
meant.
So true. So how it makes me feel is very grateful to God that he can work even in the chaos, in the degradation, the evil, when we see what ISIS was doing in Syria, hanging people on crosses, and there are people that are firm in their faith, unwilling to give up. It gives us hope.
Are these people that you are following and helping? These are the people who lived where the crucifixes were.
Yes.
I mean, the modern day crucifixes that nobody in the media wants to cover.
No. We mentioned that on our Facebook page, 8:38. We pray for persecuted Christians at 8:38 p.m. every night. We mentioned that a couple years ago. And boy, we got ripped by some news media saying there's no crucifixions in Syria and all that. Well, the news media is not omnipresent. They can't be everywhere at every time. At all places, and they missed it. And soon, pictures were coming out of Christians being crucified.
Yeah.
And so, it's a reality.
The name of the book is Standing in the Fire, and I will tell you, it will humble you a lot, because you will realize, wow, maybe my faith right now is a little shallow. And theirs is not. And the things that we can learn from these people, I mean, think of the things that you are afraid to do. Think of the things that you're afraid to say. Think of the things you're afraid to stand up for. And I mean, not even stand up for Jesus. Just stand up for true principles that you were raised to know were true. So many people won't do it because it's unpopular. You want to prepare yourself to be a leader. You need education and preparation to be able to rise to the occasion and be the person that you were born to be when times happen. A good way to start is reading Standing in the Fire, Courageous Christians Living in Frightening Times. Tom, thank you very much.
Thank you, Glenn.
You bet. Our sponsor of this half hour is LifeLock. Free Wi-Fi is not always free. I mean, you're not paying for it in one way, but sometimes because it's not safe, you will pay a much higher cost. It might be convenient, but a recent report found that 92% of Americans potentially put their personal information at risk when they use public Wi-Fi. We depend on public Wi-Fi to stay connected. Unfortunately, unsecure Wi-Fi is easier than you think to hack into. Somebody's identity is stolen every 2 seconds, every single minute of every single day. LifeLock will detect a wide range of identity threats, and if there is a problem, they have somebody here based in the U.S. that is an identity restoration specialist that's going to work to fix it. That's the really hard, you know, you can get an email from your bank, and they're like, hey, something's going on with your credit. You can check your credit score, but what does that even mean? That's not protecting your identity, and there's nobody to help you fix it unless you have LifeLock.
Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft, monitor all transactions at all businesses, but they are the best. And if you act now, you'll get the added protection of Norton Security absolutely free for the first year when you bundle Norton and your LifeLock membership. Plus, for a limited time, you'll also get a special 15% discount off the first year of your LifeLock membership. So call 1-800-LIFELOCK or go to lifelock.com. Use the promo code BECK15. That's BECK15. Save 15% today. Terms and conditions do apply.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, and welcome to the program. Wow, has it been a roller coaster of a day today? In hour number one, in case you missed it, the Mooch. Why did he leave the White House? Why was he escorted? Go ahead.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the bandango?
Yes, and we had to throw that in because...
It's probably the last day to do it, right?
Yeah, well, maybe tomorrow. No. I mean, maybe tomorrow. So why did he leave the White House, and what does it mean? What does this tell us about the Trump administration and its future? In hour number one, I explained greater predictability and stability and laid out a case of the four sides of Donald Trump in order. Loyalty to his family is number one. Number two is winning. At all costs. Number three is the honor kind of the military and the order and the enforcement of will and law. And the fourth is just an enemies list. Who's going to play the enemy this time to help me get reelected or help me accomplish the things I want? I laid this all out and showed you what I believe is coming in the next two and then the next 4 and 6 years ahead. If you missed it, that's hour number one. Look at the podcast at glennbeck.com, or if you're a subscriber, go to theblaze.com/TV. The second hour was one of the more powerful hours. If you listened at this time yesterday and you heard the guy who was transgendered, you haven't heard anything until you hear the mother who lost the state of Oregon has taken her two children because they say her IQ isn't high enough. We talked to the caseworker and we talked to the mother today, and it is...
She sounded fine.
It is powerful.
Yes. Yeah.
Powerful. Make sure you hear that. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you tonight at 5 o'clock only on the Blaze TV. It's the Think Tank.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.